How you doing, dude?
I was literally singing that to myself before you called me to start the show. But it's not like we have said goodbye to darkness at any point in the last several years. So it's like, welcome home, darkness. Jason Kidd, what the hell are we doing? And I love how they slid, like, was interviewed by Kurt Rambis, or by Rob Palenka and Kurt Rambis, just like sliding that in there. Now, I'd resigned myself to that. And, you know, we've heard some rumblings that this is where it was going. I think this is the first time the fans have had that degree of clarity on it. And so people are like, what the hell? You know, like, is there a worse nine words than Jason Kidd interviewed with Rob Palenka and Kurt Rambis, if you're a Laker fan? Come on!
As you guys have probably noticed, right before we went live, literally, like, minutes before we went live, right, we had planned on, you had sent me a message, you said, hey, what time do you want to record? I said, around 2, right? That'll give us a little bit of time just in case something drops. We don't even know what that thing might be. And then it turns out that that thing was that the Lakers are apparently talking to or spoke with Jason Kidd.
Interviewed him on Monday, yeah.
For hours. Hours! Like, how long? Yeah. Like, all right. If you're having an interview with Jason Kidd and your first question isn't, how, like, what did you learn from holding back Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? And he doesn't give you, like, a decent number or a decent response, then, like, that's it. You're done. We're good. We can move on.
I mean, look, a few people have said this already on Twitter, and they could very well be right that, you know, it's just an interview.
Maybe.
They've interviewed Ty Lue. They've interviewed Monty Williams. They're scheduled to interview Juwan Howard. They've got second interviews with those first two guys coming up. You know, maybe no harm, no foul. But just the combination of all of it.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd, who's shown him – and now, mind you, the Luke Walton allegations came out after, you know, Monday night. So, but just from a media perspective, like, Jason Kidd's been convicted of beating his wife, right?
Yeah.
And so that news comes out after your former coach who just left has an allegation levied against him from his prior stop, right? It just, like, and then on top of, so, like, that's before you get to the basketball stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what are you guys doing? You know, and Jason Kidd has demonstrated to be himself to be a problem both as a coach in terms of actually getting the job done as a coach and off of the floor as well.
Yeah.
Of all of the people to be interviewing, like, and you know, maybe he's several candidates down the list. That's what's been reported prior to this, right? Maybe he's way down the list. But if you're going to be going out of the box or with checking out guys that you're probably not going to hire, interview Ettore Messina,
exactly.
Interview Ime Udoka, interview, you know, people like that rather than a guy like Jason Kidd. He's not a good coach, and he's problematic off of the court as well.
Problematic in multiple ways.
Right.
Like, he's problematic in as a hire with his background, and he's problematic from the standpoint of, like, so the one thing that the Lakers cannot have are chemistry issues again.
Right.
Right. They have to do everything in their power to repair the chemistry that we saw last year that was kind of ripped apart because of the way that the Lakers approached the trade deadline. And
right.
And in order to do that, you do not bring, you don't even consider Jason Kidd. You don't. And here's my counter to the whole, like, you know, this is just an interview. Yes, it is. It is. But it's an interview before those candidates that you were talking about. It's an interview before the Messinas. It's an interview before the Udokas. It's an interview before you gain permission to talk to other guys, right?
Who are college coaches and things like that. Yeah.
Like, this is, say, you know, we can frame it however we want, but this is them prioritizing talking to Jason Kidd and giving him hours worth of opportunity to turn them on this. And then, by the way, like, this is all in a vacuum, the way you and I are analyzing this right now. But the people that he's supposedly, you know, that he goes into that interview and he's supposed to be convincing, that he could try convincing to actually get this job, aren't exactly brilliant basketball minds, right? It's Rob Palenka, who doesn't have very much executive experience, and it's Kurt effing Rambis.
Right. Good old Theon, yes.
It's Theon.
So Let me read you here. I've got a list of kind of a history of Jason Kidd's fuckery, some of which I agree with, some of which I don't. So as a freshman at Cal, Kidd reportedly instigated a mutiny that led to Lou Campanelli's firing. In the mid-90s, Kidd feuded with Dallas teammate Jim Jackson, which led to him demanding a trade. Kidd ultimately ended up in Phoenix. This is all from an ESPN article I'm pulling this from. In January 2001, Kidd was arrested for hitting his now ex-wife, Jumana. He pled guilty to spousal abuse and was fined in order to take anger management classes and was eventually traded to the Nets. Mm-hmm. Helped run Byron Scott out of town, so he's not all bad. In December 2007, Kidd reportedly, quote, went on strike by complaining of a migraine and missing a game against the Knicks. He then asked out and was traded back to the Mavericks. Let's see here. In 2010, Kidd was intentionally ran into Atlanta coach Mike Woodson on the sideline during a game. I don't care about that. Mm-hmm. Then we've got a little more than a week after joining the Knicks, Kidd was charged with driving while intoxicated after he crashed his SUV into a utility pole on Long Island. The Sodagate incident, incident with Lawrence Frank, and then he tried to orchestrate a power play with the Nets about becoming the next coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. He tried to get more power from the Nets in exchange, you know, for more executive general manager type of power, and then was actually traded by the Nets to Milwaukee, where he coached for a couple of years and then was replaced by a really good coach. And we've seen the difference in what Milwaukee was before and after. So, yeah, man, like this is not – no. And that's before you get to – he's not a good X's and O's coach either.
He's not even a good people person.
Right. Like, why?
Yeah. We're going to take a quick second here. And when we come back, I want to talk about the idea of learning from mistakes. Right. And this was one of the things that heading into the season that was at the top of my list of priorities. Show that you are capable of learning from mistakes. And this Kidd thing tells me they have not. Today's show is brought to you by Wyze. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD. It has images so clear you won't miss a thing. Also has night vision and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products and make them accessible to everyone. Check on your home anytime with Wyze's app's live stream. Connect with live as it unfolds in sharp focus. Live stream with 8x digital zoom. Personally speaking, I have little Avery on the way. She's going to be sleeping there in her crib, and I want to be able to see her if it's light, if it's dark. We just got her some blackout shades, so chances are it's going to be dark more often than not, and I'm really looking forward to getting her set up all over the house, by the way. At this kind of price, you can set up cameras anywhere that you see fit and be able to monitor whatever you see whatever you deem hugely valuable. Wyze is the way to go. So go to Wyze.com, that's WYZE.com/locked to take advantage of this exclusive offer. That's WYZE.com/locked. So I went into the kitchen, dude. I'm not even kidding. This actually happened. I went into the kitchen to go grab a bottle of water or a glass of water or something to drink while we record. Subconsciously, completely subconsciously, I just now realized I poured a glass of wine.
Subconscious wine is the best wine.
I took a drink of this thinking it was water, and I was like, what the anywho, that's the type of day it is today. Nice quiet day around the Lakers. But
we can't, like, look, I'm not a person who goes freaking out all of the time.
I am.
It is one thing after another right now.
It is.
I don't like going on our show and every time being and like freaking out, but dude, what are we doing?
Literally yesterday, Harrison and I recorded the other show that we do, and he, you know, the subject came up where somebody asked me, why are you always so negative? Why are you always so negative about the Lakers? And I said, because every single time, the one time I wasn't negative, the one time I was optimistic, we got stuck with Pelinka, right? And every single time that it has come down to, hey, try to predict what's happening with the Lakers, if I do anything other than think of the dumbest thing that they can do and then ask yourself how they could double down and maybe even triple down on that stupidity, that's where they've ended up, right? It's not like I want to be positive about the Lakers. It is kind of would you say it's kind of taxing? It's reached a point of almost it's taxing to cover this team because it's so they fly in the face of intelligence so often that you're just like, there's no way these people are this dumb, but they are.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating because I mean we're ultimately powerless, right? We're fans too. Mm-hmm. And it's something where, like, I don't think I have all of the answers, and I don't think, you know, I think they could find just better people. Like, yeah. Everybody, it's this multi-billion-dollar industry being run by people who have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the three people in that room, Jason Kidd, Rob Pelinka, and Kurt Rambis, who knows who else, but those three, Jeannie Buss is responsible for those three being mm-hmm. in that room. That's who it all comes back to at the end of the day is Jeannie. Like there's no reason Pelinka should be the main guy. There's no reason Kurt Rambis should be the second guy. And when you've got guys like that, they're going to be interviewing the Jason Kidds of the world instead of more qualified coaches as a result of that. So it ultimately all comes back to Jeannie's doorstep.
Yep. That's winds up being a good segue here. One of the things that you and I talked about here at the end of last season was what are things that they have to prioritize this upcoming offseason? What are the things that they really have to focus on? And the number one thing I think I said, and I believe you agreed on, was show me you're capable of learning from mistakes, right? We saw last season was a mistake, right? Last season was a disaster.
Right.
A LeBron James team didn't make the playoffs. Now, we can point to injuries and stuff like that, and I'm not even saying that it's wrong to do so. You can point to that stuff, but you also have to factor into that account, to that analysis, that wasn't a great roster, that they weren't in an optimal situation to deal with injuries as they happened because of the mistakes that they made, right? The number one mistake, I would say, that the first domino that fell in regards to mistakes made last season was entrusting an organization to somebody who had a track record of not committing to projects, brought with him the stigma of hoping that his celebrity would carry him through to success, and we saw how that turned out, right? Magic winds up leaving at the end of the season, before the season even ended, encircled, engulfed in failure, right? And by talking to Jason Kidd, so much of that applies again, right? We saw the way that he approached coaching. He just he figured not only did he, you know, struggle as a coach, but he went through those struggles and thought to himself, you know what, I'm doing such a great job in these roles that I should have more power. And that hubris comes from this idea that one's celebrity, one's talents elsewhere should carry me to success in a different role altogether.
And we've just gone through this, with Magic. And like you said, it's a matter of learning from mistakes. I also I'm starting to think more and more that the people who are in charge of things like this, that like the winning component, they want to win. It's just not the most important thing to them.
Yeah.
And it's more important that they consolidate their power, that they have people who are loyal to them, that they get themselves rid of their rivals. Mm-hmm. And if they can win along the way, that's great. But if they got to pick between the two, if they got to pick, like one of the reasons why like Jerry West and why Jeannie doesn't want Jerry West back is the old power play between her and Phil Jackson and whatnot. And if Jerry West were to come here, he's going to be perfectly willing to tell Jeannie Buss no and tell Rob Pelinka like to get the hell out of here.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like to be his own man and to run the show with a level of confidence that comes from the experience that he has.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Jeannie Buss and if you're prioritizing your control and power and loyalty, he's the last guy that you want, even if he's somebody that as fans we want because he's going to help them be a better basketball team. I don't even think that's the priority. And that to me, that's I'm going to have a hard time coping with that if that's true.
It's like, we've seen and made the comparison between Rob Pelinka and Littlefinger a ton. One of the things that was said about Littlefinger over the course of Game of Thrones was that Littlefinger would burn the world to the ground if it meant he could rule over the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like that's what's going on here, right?
Yeah.
And we've talked about Jeannie as you know, she has painted herself to be Daenerys, right? The mother of dragons and all these things. But to me, she's more of a Cersei, where it's short-sighted move after short-sighted move after short-sighted move, and she keeps shrinking the circle till eventually, right now, in where we are in the show, spoiler alert, but Cersei's circle is incredibly small. Her small council is her, right? It's her mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Jeannie, where I'm looking at where she is right now, that's what I keep seeing going on here. It's short-sighted move after short-sighted move so that she keeps power and never dilutes her potential power in an organization, which, by the way, like, she should never be worried about. She's the final say here. This is something she should not be concerned about. And the fact that she is concerned about it tells me that, like, yeah, she's probably not... She's not made out for this kind of a role. Because that's not something that, like, again, another Thrones analogy or quote here was Tywin, who told, who was it, Joffrey? It was Joffrey. He said, like, if you have to tell people that you're a king, you're not a king.
Right.
Right? And Jeannie Buss letting it leak that she wants a Buss-ran organization, that's telling everybody, nope, I'm the queen. But if you have to do that, your power's already diluted.
I mean, no one ever had asked that about her dad, right?
Nobody ever had to.
Right.
And he had stronger people around him.
Yeah. And there's nothing more I would love for Jeannie to be good at this, because we'd be set. And yeah. she's got plenty of quality attributes to her that, like, she has the foundation for what I think could be a good owner in some respects. But I don't know, man, like the whole, like, power play stuff and all of this that you're talking about is just, like, it cancels everything out. And then some, all of her positive attributes that she could be using as an owner, it really just neutralizes them.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I want to talk about a topic that we've kind of sort of alluded to but never really hammered home. And it's about kind of the way that information has flowed out of the Lakers and the type of leaks that we've seen. And so we're going to get to that here in a second. So one thing that, you know, we've focused a ton, and we will get to the conversation that I teased at the end of last segment here in a bit. We've been processing this Jason Kidd thing, and all the while, there's old Kurt Theon kicking it in this interview room, and that's another thing that's just like, you have person after person after person in this, who are making these decisions. Jeannie Buss, quote unquote, earned her position by birthright, right? Rob Pelinka, quote unquote, earned his position through his proximity to Jeannie, which was proximity to Kobe, right? And now Kurt Rambis has, quote unquote, earned his position by way of Linda Rambis and Linda's proximity to Jeannie Buss. And once again, it just gets back to learning from your mistakes. Proximity cannot be the deciding factor on these things. And yet there sits Kurt Rambis.
Yeah. I mean, and the only reason that would make sense is back to what we were talking about with power and loyalty and all of that. Like, is Kurt Rambis the best person for the job? Of course he's not. is Kurt Rambis the husband of the person that she trusts most? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And it's been good to see people at least be aware of the Linda Rambis influence. I don't know enough about exactly how that works to comment too specifically. All I know is that that's her right hand woman, is Linda Rambis. That's Jeannie's right hand woman. And, just if that's the case, if that's who's making the decisions, there are so many gaps in, like, so many experiential gaps that we just see it manifested over and over again. And the thing I keep going to, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this, is the younger Busses are the ones that have a shot. Like, they are, to me, you'll see me when a tweet occasionally, you know, Jesse Buss 2020. And yeah, same could apply to Joey. Jesse, as we all know, is the director of the scouting department, who's done a very good job over, he took over in 2013 in that position. And in terms of really being the guy who is the main voice, and his first pick was Ryan Kelly in the second round. And that was not a great one, but that's how it goes with second round picks. But then after that, he just killed it. And because the scouting department is primarily the ones responsible for the low firsts and mm-hmm. second round picks. And they got a bunch of guys with that. To me, they're like the hope that I cling to. Do you have any hope that they can kind of rise in power to, like, if the whole paradigm is that you have to be within a certain proximity of Genie, can those guys do that?
Problem is that proximity has grown, right? Or lessened, I guess, depending on your,
they've gotten farther away.
Yeah, the gap between Jesse and Joey and even Ryan West here has the gap between them and Genie actually grew over the course of last season. You know, basically, here's how I've framed it, and you have framed it in our allusions to the way that information has flowed out of the Lakers organization. I think you have Team Jesse / Joey, right, and you have Team Genie. And you have leaks from Team Jesse / Joey that pertain moves that they think the Lakers should make. Moves that any executive or owner worth their weight in gold would do, right? Just the idea of, hey, this is the opportunity we have in front of us, and here's what we should do. We're going to leak out these names, and hopefully public pressure by way of having those names out there and tied back to the organization might force Genie into waking up a little bit and rethinking the direction that she's taking the organization. The problem is, the reality of the situation is Genie's ignoring that pressure. If anything,
it's also probably, no, go ahead. You're exactly going to say, go ahead.
Well, if anything, she sees all of this as noise.
Right. And it like actually pushes her farther away.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, this, and what I think is going on, this is totally speculative, but yeah, she is thinking that they're operating how she did when she was not fully in power and Jim was around. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, you guys are trying to make a power play. I'm going to keep you as much of a distance as I can in order to maintain my, and part of the issue too, is they're 25 years younger than she is. Yeah. And when you have that type of gap in siblings, like, there can always be the older sibling seeing the younger sibling as being the kid, mm-hmm. right? When eventually they grow up and they're not kids anymore. And in many ways, Jesse and Joey are exactly that's who should be running this organization right now. They don't have a ton of experience yet, but I would be much more comfortable with throwing them into the fire. But that's just not how it works, right? Like, she's the one in charge. We hoped that she would be a significant improvement over Jim. And we're just getting a different set of problems rather than fixing them.
Yeah. Well, I think this all comes from the steps to which they gained power, right? I mean, like, right now, the only way that Jesse and Joey can earn power is to go through the closest version of a meritocracy that nepotism is going to allow, right? Mm-hmm. And they have to kind of work their way up and show Genie that, no, actually, we are growing up. Here's aspects of the organization that we've had, that we've been directly involved in, and here's the successes that we've had there. And Genie still says, oh, that's cute. You made your bed. Way to go, buddy. You know?
It needs to get to the point where Genie doesn't have anywhere else to turn to. If this, like, if this Pelinka-Rambis combo, Jesus Christ, I can't believe I'm saying this. If that combo crashes and burns, then Genie's going to be feeling a lot of the heat. Now, maybe she just goes to a different combo of people and repeats the same mistake over again. But this is the first time where she will be the person blamed for it not working if it doesn't work. So that's the point where I think those guys can be elevated, or we go outside of the organization and finally get one of those best executives in the game type of thing. But I think this is the last – God, this is such a dumb thing to say. I know this isn't true. I think this is close to the last step before things can get better. Yeah. And, you know, although they have a habit of surprising me and going deeper down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, I just, the thing, I want to believe that. I really honestly do.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
But when she was presented with an opportunity to show some type of accountability, she went the fake news route, right? Like, I want to believe that, yes, this is about as embarrassing as it can get. And Pete, after as embarrassing as it can get, a team president stepping away in part and mentioning that he wanted a tweet, right? Like, these, it doesn't get much more embarrassing than this. That's a dream job for just about everybody who has ever spent time looking at watching an NBA game, right? What would be the absolute top job that you would love to have? Well, you know what? It'd be fun to run the Lakers, right? It'd be fun to run the Lakers with LeBron James involved. And the person who had that job stepped away because he couldn't talk about Giannis being good for Milwaukee, right? And so, like, I want to believe that embarrassment would lead to a wake-up moment, a come-to-Jesus moment, right? But all that we've seen since then is, okay, fine, well, we'll keep Rob Pelinka around. And now Magic is saying that he's around the organization still anyway, right? Like, what has actually changed?
Not much. I'm sorry for the sneezes, by the way. I thought I muted my mic, and then I looked down and was like, oh, crap, that didn't work. So no. A little behind the curtain there. anyway, it's so frustrating, man. It is. I'm so frustrated right now. And with... You know, there was a report yesterday, I believe, in The Athletic that that even Luke had mentioned some issues with Pelinka and how he goes about his business. And that's why there was a mutual parting of the ways, right? Where, you know, that was part of his complaint. Obviously, there's bigger fish for him to fry right now. Yeah. And there's in that situation. But when there's such a cacophony of, like, what, and dude, we've found ourselves in a position where we've got LeBron James, we've got talented kids, we don't have any bad contracts, yep. We've got max cap space, and
we have our draft assets, by the way.
Yeah, we have a lottery pick, we have all of our draft, future draft picks, and currently in a current lottery pick, and we're still like freaking out because I think we're starting to realize just how bad the leadership is. Yeah. And after a certain age, you start to realize, once you've been through jobs and enough life experience, you come to realize how, like, leadership is everything, right? In terms of how, yeah, an organization functions and, like, the ways an organization very much ends up matching the personality of the people who are running it, their strengths and their weaknesses. So, you know, I'm hoping that we see some strengths starting to pop up, because, boy, have we been exposed to a lot of the weaknesses over the last, you know, several weeks, hell, the last year even.
I don't even know what those strengths would be. Like, I spent the first half-ish of the show yesterday talking about the strengths that Pelinka does bring to the table. And as an agent, he obviously had some strengths, right? You don't attain the amount of success that he did by being a complete dummy, right? Mm-hmm. So at least there's something to point to there. Outside of, like, this idea of loyalty, and loyalty is good. I think loyalty has its place in some aspects of business. But outside of that, I don't know really what I would point to with Jeannie. I've never heard. I've been reluctant to say this because it sounds really harsh, but I've never heard Jeannie speak in public and thought to myself, "Yep, she gets it. She understands what needs to be done here."
I haven't heard any of them. When Magic would talk, I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
Rob Pelinka is freaking, and now they haven't talked. Bizarre, man. Like,
now Pelinka, they haven't even talked. They aren't even, they think about what all they've been going through. They lose a president of basketball operations. They fire or mutually agree to part ways with their head coach. They are currently conducting a head coaching search, right? And they are going through all these steps, and we still haven't heard from anybody. The closest thing to a public statement was when they responded to the lawsuit against Luke Walton. That's the only public statement they've made. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, not great, Bob.
I mean, Yeah, it's, you know, and Tanya Ganguly just reported that, you know, Kidd didn't enter the fray as a serious candidate, but he met with Palenka and Rambis on Monday. Juwan Howard is interviewing today, and Rambis is also involved in that today, right? So we get more, and that, you know, she just reported that, so we get more confirmation about kind of Rambis's position and just what the leadership structure looks like.
Yeah, I've been thinking for a while now, and I think I even predicted on a couple shows that it looked like it was going to be Palenka as vice president of whatever Jim old title used to be, because remember they created a title for Magic, which I felt like was now I really feel this way, but at the time I kind of thought like, oh, that's a nice petty move from Jeannie to elevate Magic above the job that Jim once had, right? Jim was once the VP of basketball ops and stuff like that, and they made Magic president. I think Rob winds up being president, Rambis winds up being GM, and we go down the darkest timeline.
Yeah, I mean, all of this, I still have a little bit of hope. Mm-hmm. I'm not as hopeless about it as you. This summer will answer some of the questions about how much this stuff matters. And like I said, I just got done saying that leadership matters a ton. The one person that we don't include in these conversations that we probably should is LeBron. Mm-hmm. In that he is the one leader in this organization that I have some faith in. He's not perfect, but he is he knows how to get this done. And no, he's the only person in their current position in this organization that knows how to actually accomplish the highest of heights.
And has earned his standing.
And I'm hoping that in terms of free agent appeal, in terms of who the next coach will be, all of that, he's the guy that I'm pinning my hopes on, because I just don't have a high enough opinion of everyone else.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. But even there, remember, we had tension between LeBron and LeBron's camp and Jeannie Buss's camp over the course of last season, right? The fact that it was ever reported, the fact that it ever was made public, that Jeannie Buss was at one point willing to trade LeBron as a result of the leaks of information out of the Anthony Davis situation, like a smart organization doesn't let that information become public and publicly known. And two, a smart executive, a smart owner, never lets that known, period. Even right. If she has that opinion, she tries to do whatever she possibly can to forget that thought ever crossed her mind, let alone say it to somebody, let alone let that information become public knowledge. So, yeah, what it all comes down to is there are smart people, I think, associated with the Lakers. There are people who I trust associated with the Lakers. Unfortunately, the person who holds all the power is not one such person.
And the people within the Lakers organization, not talking about LeBron, because I think when LeBron's done with his career, he's going to be going on to his endeavors, right?
And yeah.
Specifically speaking of Jesse and Joey, they're not going anywhere, right? They are unfireable now, but they are going to need to learn how to play the political and power game in order to bring themselves up. Like, they're good at their jobs. Joey runs the South Bay Lakers, mm-hmm. and they've been a good organization that's done a really good job of finding, like, NBA
Alex
players.
Alex Caruso,
right?
Mario Jones, David Wabba.
Right. Jonathan Williams was a nice undrafted. Just like guys like that, that they've been able to find. It's a really well done. Nick Mazzella is another guy. He's not one of the bus kids, but he's been the GM for South Bay for several years. You've got smart guys in this organization that they need to learn how to acquire this power and play this game, because just being good at their job isn't going to be enough.
Yeah.
We need them to be elevated within, because that's a much more likely way of it happening, I think, than a savior coming in to fix everything from up top.
Wouldn't it be, God, this is, this let's end this on a high note. Wouldn't this be the funniest, and by funny I mean like laughing before a train hits you, outcome where Jeannie fails so miserably here that she flips her vote, Jeannie flips her vote, and the Lakers bus children vote to sell before we ever get to see Joey and Jesse in the roles that we think they could actually flourish?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it would have to be where Jeannie doesn't want to do it anymore, yeah. Right? And that would be, I don't know how far it would have to go to get to that point.
Because basically, the math that I understand at this point, and you know, this situation might have updated, is basically Jim resigned his vote. He no longer has a vote in the trust, right? He still benefits from the trust. He's still a part of it, but he doesn't have a vote in it. Jeannie obviously still has her vote. Johnny, according to Bill Oram, basically said that he was going to vote in the same way that Jeannie votes until she dies. And then Jeannie is Jeannie's closest ally, leaving Jesse and Joey. But if Jeannie decides to flip her vote, Jeannie rolls with that, and then Johnny rolls with that, Jesse and Joey get outvoted, and the bus children sell. And that happens before Jesse and Joey ever get the opportunity to run the Lakers.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Yeah. I mean, actually, you know, if we get another, like, I don't care who the owner is. Just be confident. Yeah, that's fair. Like, if they sell, like, hell, if I could snap my fingers and make that happen right now, I would do it.
Yeah.
Right? Because they would be someone that would be very fought over. Like, there would be multiple ownership groups that would try to pursue, you know, buying this team. Yeah. And they would want some return on their investment. And you're going to get return on your investment in this, not just through the TV deals and things like that. But if Lakers are actually friggin' good.
Yeah.
Like, I've been saying for a long time, this fan base is ready to explode. They just want something. Yeah. Just give us something. They've given us
the South Bay Lakers.
Yeah, yeah, the South Bay. Those are fun games to go to, man. They're a well-run organization, and it's the G League, right? Completely scaled down, but it's, you know, if the Lakers were able to be well-run in that respect, they'd make a lot of money off of that. So, I like, if they ended up selling, and Joey and Jesse, like, I like them. They're my hope in the current framework. But if they were to sell, I think the Lakers would be in much better shape than they are now.
That's a sad thing to say, dude. Remember when Jerry Buss died? And, you know, I remember watching that back then. I think it was aired on FS1, right, or Fox Sports West, whatever whichever Fox affiliate was carrying the Lakers at that time, and they held this big memorial for Dr. Jerry Buss, and Magic spoke, and Kobe spoke, and Shaq spoke. Remember Shaq's story about how he said, like, he went to Jerry and asked for an extension, and Jerry traded him, right? That was a great little tidbit there. But I remember Jeannie standing up there, and I watched it with tears in my eyes, and she said, "I promise, I am never ever going to sell the Lakers. I'm going to turn this around. I'm going to live up to the promises that and live up to the brand that my dad built." Right. And I remember at that time, it was a source of pride. It was something that I was really pulling for. But at the end of the day, I care a hell of a lot more about the Lakers than I do about the Buss family.
Well, and she didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what she wants. It's not what she's prioritizing, obviously. Like, bro, it's one thing to hire, like, Sam Presti when he should have hired Bob Myers or Masai Ujiri. Yeah. Rob Pelinka and Kurt Rambis versus what they could have is so far beyond the pale that it's obvious that something completely different is important to them in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, so she just doesn't know how to do it. She might want to do all those things, but she just doesn't know how.
Yeah. We'll see. All this said, maybe it's just an interview.
Maybe. Oh, I don't think Jason Kidd gets this job.
I don't think so either.
They're not. Yeah.
Well, just, but the whole thing. Remember, the car accident analogy, right? Like, they're not actually gonna. There's no way they're actually. Oh,
yeah.
You know, we've seen this. We've said that before. We've seen how it turned out. So who knows? But maybe it is just an interview. Maybe it's a favor to Jason Kidd's agent, though I don't know who his agent might be and why they would feel the need to do that favor. Whatever the situation might be, maybe we're freaking out. But I'll say this, Pete. I know myself as a fan and as somebody who analyzes things. I go from 0 to 10 faster than just about anybody who has a platform. But you, if you're freaking out the way that in any way that is close to how I freak out over some of this stuff, That tells me that they have given us enough reason to freak out to this point.
Right. It's all of it. It's not just, oh my God, they're interviewing Jason Kidd. They're probably not giving him that job, right? It's not just that. It's everything in totality. That's probably why it's been a sustained freak out for me over the last several weeks, because it took me a while to get here. It's going to take me a while to leave and for them to, you know, earn my trust back. Yeah. My biggest and best hopes are in the summer, right? I think that's the part that they have the most talent on. They have a LeBron to attract people to come join him. I still think that has power. Maybe that's me being foolish and naive, right? But I still think that that matters, that it's LeBron, and that LeBron matters a lot more than Jason Kidd, Rob Pelinka, Kurt Rambis, Jeannie Buss, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. They've got a good draft department, right? They don't have Magic to swing in on the last day and be like, oh, we're picking this dude, instead of like, where everyone is like, we've been putting in a year's worth of work with multiple people, and you're just going to be the guy who picks friggin' Mo Wagner, right? You know, anyhow, I have some degree of hope. It's just that it's all of it together. It's just like, it's like they have this little room of people where they're trying to figure out, like, what is the most frustrating thing that we could do? And like, how could we frustrate Laker fans the most today? Like, they've got a whole committee working meeting on that, and that's, and they're very good at their job.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Thank you to the Lakers for making this interesting and getting me gray hair. We will be back at it again tomorrow. Pete and I will be back at it following that on Friday. And who knows what the hell we'll be talking about at that point. Ooh, shit, Magic Johnson is the next head coach of the Lakers. Why not?